I know we are in the middle of fall break right now. We're on the back end of it. Some of you are here or maybe you missed last Sunday, but let me just rehash real quick what this series is all about. First of all, I don't want you to get the impression that this series has anything to do with bashing social media. It has nothing to do with that. I'm not saying that social media is bad. I'm not saying that you shouldn't use it, any of that. That's not what Fakebook is all about. What we are, though, looking at is how do we put out ourselves to the world? How do you live your life? How do you live the identity that you have received in front of others? Last week, I shared with you that actually this title, Fake Book, it's nothing new. There was a book actually written. It was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and the title of the book was Fake Book. And a guy basically lived a year of his life out there in Facebook land, but he lived it as a complete and total lie. None of it was true. He said he was leaving his job, he was going out west, and people were following him and liking him and encouraging him and saying all these great things about what he was doing, and none of it was true. Every bit of it was a lie. It was fake. And then at the end of this book, and after his experience of kind of this social experiment that he did, he asks two questions. He says, one, we need to ask ourselves, who is the real me? And then the second question, he says, and what is the story that you're trying to tell others about yourself? What is the story you're trying to tell others about yourself? I think those are great questions for us. As people who are following Jesus, seeking to follow Jesus, whatever that looks like, I think these are great questions for us to ask. Well, who am I? And what am I trying to project out there as to my identity, as to who I am at the very core? So we're going to begin to work with these questions. Last week, we talked a little bit about what it's like to kind of be addicted to getting affirmations from people. You know, that's one great thing that social media does is it gives you the option to have your posts or have your comments or whatever, to have them liked. And boy, oh boy, we like it when people like our stuff. And there can actually be, and psychologists have noted this, there can actually be an addiction to that kind of affirmation. And so we talked a little bit about that last week. And this week, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what it means to try so hard for people to like us and to accept us. We try really hard at this stuff, you all know. We try to make it look like we have it all together. We try really, really hard to make our lives seem perfect. We try really hard to make that vacation we just took look like it was the best vacation ever. We try really hard around the holidays to make the holiday table seem perfect. We try really hard to make the weekend look like it was just the absolute perfect weekend, albeit with the Vols winning this weekend, it was at least a step in the right direction. We try really hard to project this image of ourselves out to others. But what I've learned is that in the midst of all of that trying, I found that's really not enough. No matter how hard I try to convince you of who I am, in the end, it's not enough. It doesn't matter that much. I was reading a book recently, it's an older book by a guy named John Ortberg. It's called The Life You've Always Wanted. And he kind of describes this fictitious scenario. And I want to read it to you. He says, just pretend like you're sitting on your couch and you're having your cookies and milk and you're watching TV and all of a sudden there is a knock at your door. And you go there and it is the Olympic Committee for the United States of America. And you open the door, and the first thing they say is, good news, we're here from the United States Olympic Committee. We have been looking for someone to run the marathon in the next Olympics. We have statistics on every person in this entire nation. We have checked everybody's records, their performance in the president's physical fitness test in grade school. We've got records of your body type, your bone structure, right down to the current percentage of body fat that you have. And we have determined that out of several million people, you are the one person here in America with a chance to bring home the gold medal in the marathon. So you are on the squad. You will be running the race. This is a chance of a lifetime for you. As you sit there putting that fifth Oreo cookie in your mouth. You're surprised by all of this. The furthest that you have ever run is from the couch to the refrigerator. But after the first shock passes, you get gripped by the realization of what's happening in your life. Your picture of yourself mingling with elite athletes of the world begins to entice you. You follow yourself into an imaginary world and you desire to see where it's going to take you. At night, you dream about standing on that podium to hear your national anthem play, to receive the medal. You begin to feel a sense of urgency. You know what it's going to be like with lots of people watching you on television. But greater than any external pressure is this internal drive that says, this is the race I've been created to run. This is my destiny. This is why I've been born. Here's my chance. This race becomes a great passion of your thoughts and your life. It dominates your mind. It occupies every waking moment. To run the race well and to win it, if you can, becomes the central focus of your existence. It is what gets you out of bed in the morning. It is what you live for, and it is a chance of a lifetime. And then it dawns on you, there's no way I can run a marathon right now. No matter how hard you try. You see, we try really hard to accomplish things. We give it our very best. I mean, we would love to be in that scenario. But in order for us to even think about running a marathon, there's going to have to be some serious things that happen. First of all, you're going to need to enter into a life of training. I mean, just because someone tells you that you're able to do it and you think in your mind, well, I'm going to go out there and try to do it, doesn't mean that you're going to be successful at it. You're going to need some training. You're going to need to rearrange your life around certain practices that will help you be able to run a marathon. You're going to need to change the way you eat, the way you spend your time. You're going to need to change, you know, some of the groups of people that you hang out with in preparation to get ready for running a marathon. In other words, when it comes to running a marathon, you're going to need to train, not merely try. And this does not apply just to athletics. I think this applies in all aspects of our life. It applies to our emotional health. It applies to our mental capabilities. It applies to our spiritual lives as well. We can't just try to make that stuff work. I mean, we can. But what it takes over a long term is training. It takes some seriously hard, devoted training. And I believe that that's what God desires in our lives. This past June, we had taken my son Samuel over to England, and we'd got a day pass for the subways, for the tube, for the underground, whatever you want to call it. And we were going down, and we had our tickets, and you had to have your tickets to get into the subway, but you also had to have your tickets to get out of the subway. And we're going down, and one of our tickets got out of our hands and flew up because there's like a wind that comes down from the underground, and it pushes wind up the staircase, and the ticket started flying up the escalator. I remember from my younger days, you know, when I was a kid, you know what we did? We just would run up the escalator, right? I was like, no big deal. Now, you got to understand these escalators are considerably longer than the ones that are in the department stores. But I was like, no big deal. I'll just run up and I'll get that ticket. And I turned around and I started running up and I was making some pretty good progress. But then I realized, golly, this is forever. And then I realized my legs were starting to quiver. And then I realized I was gasping for air. And then I realized I was no longer making any progress. And I'm shouting to people who are riding down there looking at me like, what is this crazy guy doing? I'm shouting at them, you know, grab that ticket, grab that ticket. No one helped at all. And I got to probably within 15 feet of the top where the ticket had actually blown up and over the escalator. I'd got about 15 feet from the top and I couldn't do it anymore. I was disappointed in myself. I was surprised, to be honest, that I was unable to do it. And then I ride the escalator all the way down to the bottom, and I am like gasping for breath. I get off the escalator. I have to sit down. I mean, I am worn out. And what I realize is I was not physically ready to be able to try to do what I just tried to do. I hadn't been running. Hadn't been doing any cardio. I certainly hadn't been doing any stairs. I hadn't been doing any of that stuff. And yet in my mind, I thought, when I turned around and saw the ticket blowing up, all I had to do is try real hard. I'll be able to go up there and get it. But little did I not realize in that moment that there was no way I was going to be able to accomplish that. And I think that happens in our lives. We think if we just try real hard, we got this. One of the things that I've learned when I've read through the scriptures and I've read through the story of God is that there's this training, this discipline that needs to happen. I remember one time in my spiritual life, I was drained, just as I was physically drained from that effort of trying to go get that ticket. I remember there was a time in my spiritual life where I was just physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I was just drained. I didn't have anything to give. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to go to a worship service. And I'd go to a worship service, and yeah, it helped a little bit. And then I thought, well, I'm just going to pick a book in the Bible, and I'm just going to read through it. And it was good. And I said, I'm going to go find a new devotional. And I did that. And it was good, but they were like all very short-lived. You know, they were just like little spurts. And I was thinking that was going to fix me. I was thinking that was going to make everything right. And albeit it helped a little bit, over the long run, it didn't. And I realized that I needed something more. I needed something more than just a little shot. I needed something more than just a like. I needed something more than just a good hard try and making a good effort. I needed something over the long haul. And I found that that came with not just trying, but training. Okay, so you're thinking, well, what does that mean? You know, Paul, he had a young protege who was in ministry with him. And, you know, a lot of times when you're younger, people don't give you a fair shake of the stick. You know, they think, well, you're young. It'll eventually come to you, whatnot. And I think his little protege, Timothy, was hearing some of that. And Paul was constantly trying to encourage Timothy. And one of the things that he said was this, that you need to be trained in godliness. You need to be disciplined in godliness, learning what it means to live in a godly life. And it wasn't just a one-shot kind of thing. Training takes time. He also wrote a letter to a group of Christians in the city of Corinth. Now, Corinth was a big industrial trading city in the biblical times. It was perfectly situated with two ports and people would come from one direction or the other direction. They would find safe harbor there in Corinth. And so Corinth became a very lucrative trading city, and people spent a lot of time there. It grew really fast. And in fact, the second largest sporting events happened in the city of Corinth. That was called the Isthmian Games. It was only second to the Olympic Games in Greece. And Paul spent some time in Corinth. In fact, some biblical scholars believe that Paul may have been there in 51 AD when they had the Isthmian Games. You see, Paul was a tent maker by trade, and chances were he was there. He was making tents for all of the spectators who came to watch the games, making tents for some of the athletes who were there for the games. A lot of people believe Paul was indeed there. And Paul writes these words, trying to kind of capture on this idea of athletics and competition and trading. And so he writes these words, and I think they're still very, very pertinent to us. He says, "Don't you know that all the runners in the stadium run, but only one gets the prize? So run to win. Everyone who competes practices self-discipline in everything. The runners do this to get a crown of leaves that shrivel up and die, but we do it to receive a crown that never dies." Self-discipline. "So now, this is how I run. Not without a clear goal in sight. I fight like a boxer in the ring, not like someone who is shadow boxing. Rather, I'm landing punches on my own body and subduing it like a slave. I do this to be sure that I myself won't be disqualified after preaching to others." Now you may be thinking, Paul, what are you saying here? I mean, I get the whole thing. Only one runner wins the race. We got to run like we want to win. And that there's discipline that's involved in that. But one of the things that happened with athletes in these games, whether it be the Olympic Games or the Isthmian Games, is when you chose to participate in these games, you also had to commit to 10 months of training with a group of people. That was part of the deal. If you were going to run in the games, if you were going to compete in those games, then you committed to training for 10 months. And if you didn't, then you could be disqualified from the games. You know, when Paul talks about, "So that I myself won't be disqualified from preaching to others," what are you saying is, I've been in this work of training to get ready for this ministry thing, to get ready for what God has called me to do. It's not like I'm just trying because I want to. I've been training for this. And I've been training for it because I don't want to be disqualified. I don't want this message that God has given to me to be dismissed. I've worked at this. I want to run this race. I want to win. Because what we have to win is something far greater than what this earth gives its winners. We have a home in the heavens, made with God's hands, not human hands. This is our eternal prize, and it's already been won for us. We're just called to run in this race as if we're going to win. And it involves training. What does that look like? The biblical word was discipline. I think a lot of times we have messed up this word discipline because a lot of times we have just automatically made the word discipline as another word for punishment. And that's not what discipline is. Discipline actually comes from the word that means learner. You know, we talk about Jesus and his 12 disciples. The word disciples comes from the same word that discipline comes from. And the disciples were people who learned from a rabbi, from a teacher, a new way of living their life. Jesus spent 3 years with these guys. Now, if they had just about a month after meeting Jesus decided, "Well, we're going to try real hard to change this world," would it have been successful? I don't know. My hunch is, however, that a month with Jesus probably would not have been enough for them to really grasp this new way that Jesus was trying to show people how to live their lives. He spent 3 years with them. And then at the end of Jesus' human life here on earth, it looked like, for a brief moment, that it had failed. Because these guys denied Jesus, they betrayed Jesus, and they deserted Jesus. At the very end, after 3 years of training, it looked like it was a loss. But it wasn't. And when God raised Jesus from the dead to show us that the victory's won, folks, the victory over this life has already been won. When that happened, all of a sudden, all of that training came back and they went about the work that God had called them to do. And let me tell you, friends, they turned the world upside down. Jesus even told them, you're going to do greater things than I have. But they spent time training, discipline, learning from their Savior. And I think the best way that that happens is with others. It's with one another. You can't train all by yourself. I mean, you can, but it doesn't usually amount to a lot. For instance, when I decided that I was going to golf, I loved the sport. There seemed to be some natural things about the game that pertained to me, but I had an awful swing. I had an absolutely terrible swing. I had this ball that sliced way off to the right, but I loved the game. If I hadn't had some people who began to surround me, I had a team of golfers, I had a golf coach, I ended up getting a golf teacher to help correct some of the things about my golf life that weren't good, things that would improve my ability to play the game and to play it efficiently, effectively, so that I might actually win some golf tournaments. It took a group of people and a lot of training and them giving me a lot of exercises and practicing certain disciplines that helped me to improve in that. We all need that. I couldn't diagnose my swing issues all by myself. I couldn't. I needed someone else to help me with that. And I think as it relates to our spiritual lives, we think that we can just do it all on our own, that we don't need other people. But I'm here to tell you the Bible clearly, over and over, talks about doing life together, doing life with one another, because we need one another. Right at the very beginning of the Bible, it says, it's not good for Adam to be alone. And so Eve was created. In Ecclesiastes, it says two are better than one. Because if one falls down, the other is there to help them up. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. Over and over again, we see friendships develop. We see bonds develop. People helping one another because we need one another. If we're going to grow in this spiritual race that we're in, we're going to improve in that, then we need one another desperately. So I want to invite you, if you haven't yet ever considered being a part of a small group, you've heard me talk about this at times in the past. In fact, it's been about a year. About a year ago, I presented to you all that about 10% of us are involved in some kind of small group. And I was hoping that we could grow in the next 5 years to 55% of us being in some kind of small group. Well, last year, about this time, about 10%, we now have 30 small groups at work in the ministry and in the life of Powell Church. Some of those groups meet on Thursday nights. They're open share groups. Some of those groups meet on Sunday mornings at 9:30 and 11 o'clock. Some of the groups meet on Wednesday evenings, and some groups meet at other times in other places. I know when I came here, there were 17 groups. Now we've almost got 30. I want to say there's 29 groups now. And we've gone from 10% to roughly 18% of people involved in some kind of small group. And what I hear coming out of these small groups is people growing in their faith. I just want to put it out there to you. Or maybe God is calling you to a life of not just trying to follow Jesus, but a life of training, of being trained in the ways of Jesus. And I tell you, it is so much better to train in the ways of Jesus when you're with followers of Jesus. I mean, I look to certain people all the time to find out, oh, wow, look how they're living their life before Jesus. Maybe they have something to teach me. Maybe I can learn from that. We need community. And so, an easy way to get connected with a group. And we've got men's groups. We've got women's groups. We've got couples groups. We've got Sunday school groups. We've got all kinds of groups. We've got groups of 2 and 3 people. And we've got groups upwards to 15 to 20 people. Whatever your need is, we want to meet that need. Because we want you to grow in your faith. We want you to be able to run that spiritual race so that you run it and that you don't grow weary. There are going to be times in life where you're going to wish you had something that has trained you up to run with perseverance. And I just want to encourage you, get connected. It makes a world of difference. And it's what Jesus did with his disciples. And if it's something that Jesus did, then I think it's something we all should follow.